Good morning and welcome to the Time Machine with Helmut on Eagle FM. And I only realized like way after my show yesterday when one of my number one fan, actually she's going to kill me if she finds out I said, one of my number one fan. Now I pointed out that why do you keep referring to your Sunday show as the Time Machine? I was like, I know, like, this whole thing of waking up in, I'm not a morning person. So I really, you know, just, Sundays, that's mind the gap. Monday to Friday, only for this week. The show that I'll be hosting is The Time Machine, where we use history to prove a point. And today we are back again with one part. You know how Monday to Wednesday of last week, I was pointing out at a lot of things that I, you know, that I'm not finding in newspapers and news headlines. So, everything that's being reported on Venezuela, like, you just, like, people begin to think, you know, to, you know, report on things like it's just happened out of the blue. It did not. So, Monday to Friday of last week here on Yours Truly, a Time Machine. So I decided to dive into, the history from, I think we started with the British, but, on Tuesday we came to the 1953 Iran, and then Wednesday, that's when we just zoned in on Venezuela, like the whole nationalization discussion. But that was just the political aspect of it. Today we're here to talk about the money aspect of it, and boy is it sweet. Now, has anyone of you heard of the company called ConocoPhillips? Because unless you have heard of it, unless you understand what the stake they have in Venezuela is and how far back they go in terms of investment and how much they poured in Venezuela's oil industry, you don't have a full picture. And this is one thing I don't like about mainstream. I mean, like, these guys suck at their job. I mean, I'm a comedian. I'm doing way better than they are. We don't know what Donald Trump is thinking. Oh, come on. Give me a break. So, let's talk about one of my favorite company that I honestly just discovered last night. But I had no idea it existed. Now, for those of us that are not familiar with ConocoPhillips, is an American company. It's a multinational corporation engaged in hydrocarbon exploration. That's a fancy private school way of saying they are very big in the oil industry. And it's based in the Energy Corridor District of Houston, Texas. That is the south of the U.S. Southeast? Yeah. Let's just say, generally speaking, south of the U.S. Now, the south of the U.S. is an interesting geographical area when you talk about, when you're on the subject of oil, because this place is actually very rich in oil. Now, at this point, you're wondering, why is a country that's rich in oil kidnapping a president of a whole sovereign nation for oil? Well, it turns out, this whole thing they call oil, it turns out they're also different. Like, how juice have different flavor. Oil also has different flavor. Just don't drink it if you work at a service station. The point I'm trying to make here is that, there's light. There are two main distinctions. There's heavy and light oil. Now, if you have seen the type of oil that they use to run ships, then you know that this is actually the type of oil that you can carry with a shovel. Like, it's near solid. It has a very extremely low viscosity. But that's not the type of oil, because that's refined. That's refined. Now, the type of oil that we're talking about in terms of its description of heavy and light is how it's found in the ground. The U.S. has a lot of light oil. That means it's easy to refine. And they only discovered it way later, like the Saudis and Venezuela, I believe, discovered theirs earlier than the U.S. discovered this. Now, the thing is, a lot of the South, oil refineries in the southern parts of the U.S. were actually specifically designed to refine heavy fuel. There then comes a problem. Well, why can't they just start refining light fuel? It turns out that's not how it works. A nuclear facility, not a nuclear facility, an oil refining facility that's designed to refine light oil cannot just switch overnight and start refining heavy oil. You can repurpose it, but it also costs billions. Now, you first have to understand that, an oil refinery is already a multi-billion-dollar piece of infrastructure. So, but the whole handling of this thing is making me go like, it's begging every part of me to go back to the political part, to the political part of the discussion, but I will hold my peace and just talk more about the money. There's one organization that I remember talking about here, but it was just, I know I only spoke about it once, and then it popped up again in my in my last year's research of yesterday. That's the one that sent me down the rabbit hole of the whole ConocoPhillips. Now, that organization is ICSID for short. Now, ICSID basically ICSID stands for, hang on a second, for International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes. That means, you know how Shell and, you know how Shell is part of the, part of the big players that are involved in Namibia's, oil industry. If, take for example, 5 years down the line, a president that comes to power decides, you know what, I'm going to nationalize this oil. That means the whatever, infrastructure that they have set up, let's say 10, 20 years down the line, a refinery has been, has been funded and been set up, it's been built, and we all know we don't have money for an oil refinery. So chances are very high if we build one, it's going to be heavily, heavily dominated by either foreign or domestic private investors. So because of that, if any president comes into office after that massive investment and come up with a brilliant idea of nationalizing without proper compensation, which is what actually the ICSID guys are there for, the private or domestic investors can now, can sue the Namibian government or NAMCO or both. Now, the both part is what's going on in Venezuela. With the whole, ConocoPhillips discussion. But the whole kidnapping part, it's making me think, at this point, even Putin is going like, so hang on a second. Y'all are telling me that all we had to do was just storm in there, kidnap Zelensky, and run the country ourselves? Because we've been bombing the heck out of Ukraine since 2022. So all we had to do was, just bomb Kyiv, kidnap Zelensky, and then, find someone who is in line with our interest, and then problem solved. Because that's exactly what Trump is doing. Point of correction. That's exactly what the U.S. is doing, not Trump. Believe me, it's not him. He's, again, Trump is a Bluetooth speaker. There is a smartphone somewhere that's, that has the playlist. But the bottom line is, as you can imagine right now, presidents are scared to death. And they're not showing it. It's 5 days, just 5 days in 2026. And presidents are going, so what you're telling me is if I nationalize my own resources without compensating the guys that invested heavily in here, then all you will just do is, you do realize it took like less than an hour for them to get Maduro. Now, I'm not saying let's put ourselves in Maduro's shoe. All I'm just saying is, one, if I was a president right now, I'll be calling the American embassy every 5 minutes and say, do you guys need water? Are you sure you don't need extra electricity? Oh, come on, guys. You're my guests. I'm here to, at your disposal for pretty much anything. You guys want extra land. And we all know that here in Namibia, at least that's at least here in Namibia, the American embassy has the biggest piece of land that I know, that more than any embassy that I know in the, you know, in this capital. So I think I'll be calling them and saying, you guys need, are you sure you don't need the extra land? Are you, you guys sure you didn't, you don't need, need maybe, I don't know, the whole, you know, you know, I mean, you can have the whole Eros or the hell, or the whole Lane Wind. That's okay. That's okay. It's nothing wrong with that. That's okay. And, the problem, you see, if they, you know, if you allow them to expand to the, you know, if you allow them to expand south, boy, I'm going to anger the guys, because they, you know, is it the Botswana High Commission is there, the Indian High Commission is there, the Malaysian High Commission is there, the, yeah, there are a lot of high commissions there. The South African one is way far, way far. That one is actually, it's much closer to the Russian embassy, which is, makes sense. Now, so all I'm saying is, if I was a president of any country that doesn't have an army strong enough to defend them, to defend my country against Americans, all I'll be saying is, Americans, any embassies in this country, they can follow the diplomatic channels, for example, through the, you know, the Ministry of International Relations to, you know, to reach the executive branch. But for you guys, special guest with a golden point of correction. Is it a golden entry card? No, you guys, all you just have to do is show up without any appointment whatsoever. I'll do for you anything you want. I'll go do for you anything you want. Anything. I beg. Anything. Except there's just one problem. That's not what we have, we're here to talk about. That's the political part. We're here to talk about the money. They say, follow the money. Foreign direct investors, after this show, oh, you are going to look at foreign direct investors differently. Now, what is ICSID? Well, let's see the information that I was able to gather. Yours truly here managed to get the following information about this organization called ICSID. Now, when companies, foreign, when companies get into a dispute, more like they want to, you know, they have grievances against the country, especially multinational companies, you know, against the country that they have invested in. You know, if a president comes in and start nationalizing stuff left, right, and center, they have an institution they can sue that country on. And that institution is called ICSID. At least, look, ICSID, I'm the only one that came up with that. Maybe they are calling it ICSID. One thing I know is that I remember talking about this when Tanzania was sued by one, I'm not sure if that's still an active case, because, oh, they have their own control of a lot of pending cases. Angola is there. I'm not sure about us, because it's a very long list. Very long, oh, very long. Very long, very long. I was just scrolling through that list and there was Angola. I was like, hey. And actually, there are a lot of countries there. A lot. Now, the International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes, or the Center for short, was established by the Convention on the Settlement of Investment Disputes between states and nationals of other states. Now, the convention that, you know, the convention that led to the introduction of this, ICSID is the ICSID convention, or just the convention for short. It's an international center for settlement of investment disputes, or the center for short, which was implemented or established by the convention of settlement of investment disputes, or the convention. The convention was formulated by the executive director of International Bank of Reconstruction Development. This is, we're talking, post-World War II during the reconstruction of Europe and this, and all that. Now, ICSID was established in line with Article 2, Article 2, Sub-Article 1 of the ICSID Convention. Now, ICSID provides facilities. That's their mandate. That Article 2, sub-Article 1, is actually carries their mandate, not when they were established. Their mandate is to provide facilities for conciliation and arbitration of investment disputes between contracting states and nationals of other contracting states. Contracting states and nationals of contracting states. This is where the law of persons now becomes very instrumental, in a sense that now you have to understand that a national is a person. And biologically, a person is a living organism that has, warmongering idiot with 32 teeth, assuming it didn't lose some of it in a bar fight, two legs and two arms. But in legal terms, an organization also is a person, which is the person that falls under the category of a juristic person. So when the ICSID guys here says that their mandate is to facilitate conciliation and arbitration, kind of like the same, basically the same way that the, what's this? Not the Ministry of Labor. I really need to iron up on my, we'll get back to that. Now, conciliation and arbitration, conciliation and arbitration between contracting states, labor commission. That's the thing in Mercedes-Benz Street in Komasda. That's the same role that, ICSID basically plays. So, their role is to not to hold full-blown court cases. They just hold conciliations and arbitrations. These are basically negotiation, with one of them carrying more magnitude in terms of the arbitrator, aka, call it like a small judge. Not like the, court judge, like the courtroom judge, but like a small judge. Now, the main difference basically between conciliation and arbitration is that in conciliation, the two parties that are engaged in a dispute are allowed to basically sort out their issues without more like the dominance in terms of imposition of how they should work it out by the conciliator. Again, like a small judge, just a little lower than the arbitrator. Now, if the two parties cannot solve their disputes at conciliation, where they have more power to basically compromise and reach a common ground, that's when the case is taken to arbitration. Now, on arbitration, the arbitrator, again, like a small judge, just a little bit above the conciliator. Above the conciliator, and in our case, above the conciliator, but below a labor court judge. It's amazing. The structure is awesome. Now, what then happens is that once the case moves from conciliation to arbitration, what begins to happen is, the arbitrator is going to, be somewhat, impulsive. It's going to impose a lot of things. Like, I know you guys don't want to compromise on this, but, now, according to what both of you have presented, this is the solution. And this is the one that you can follow. But which is not the case in conciliation. It's more flexible. In conciliation, the parties in dispute have basically, they are given the last time to sort out their issue. Basically, to grow up and sort it out. But if they are not growing up and sorting it out, everything goes to conciliation and to arbitration, and arbitrator is like, all right, since none of you wants to grow a pair and make a good decision on these things, let me tell you now, present your case, especially the one that presents first is the one that is aggrieved. In other words, the person that filed the case is the one that's going to be there saying that on this day and this time and this, I was working for this person doing this and this and that, and then this and this happened, and now this homeboy doesn't want to give me my money, and blah, blah, blah. Now, and after that, the arbitrator tells you, the one that came with grievances, and gives a chance, hear both parties type of things, like hear both parties. Audi Alterem Partem. Fun fact, that's where the name, the car brand Audi name comes from. The founder of the car brand, actually, was working for a car manufacturing company, and he was fired, from what I gather, and he felt like, his side of the story was not listened to properly while looking for a name for his car brand that he was, that he established after that. His son was a law student who was like, well, if you were Miss Head, why can't you just call the car brand, I mean, Audi? It's short for Audi Alterem Partem. Like, before you, you know, you draw conclusion in any type of dispute, especially if you're an independent third party, that's trying to resolve that, to help the two parties engaged in a conflict to resolve their conflict, at least hear both sides of the story. But anyway, digressed. Coming back, it's simple. The party that is being accusationed will now have to defend themselves. Like, you know what? I hear what my employee here, for example, that's what you'd hear a lot at the Labor Commission. I hear what the, you know, or what this woman being here is saying. But that's actually not the whole story. What happened was this and this and this and this. That's where the documents now comes in handy. AKA, the claims I'm making against my employer are based on this piece of document. I was given, I as the employer held this hearing on this day. I gave this warning. I gave this warning. I gave this warning. And then I gave this last warning. You can't just stand there and say, well, I gave him 5 warnings and then I just called it a no. You're going to have to paperwork, Baba, paperwork. You can provide paperwork with a stamp of your company and well-documented, well-written documents. Or, in some cases, in a lot of countries, it is also normal to just present papers that have numbers and faces of prominent political figures on them. We'll just pause it there. It's an awesome process. Now, basically, on a large scale, on a global scale, in terms of literal multi-billion dollar investments, ICSID is that organization that ensures that countries that are being invested into, especially when they do cater for all, they do cater for all disputes, basically, as long as it's investment related. It facilitates the conciliation and arbitration of investment disputes between contracting states, aka, those of you that have been running around saying, hey, we want foreign direct investment. That you better see whatever you're signing through, because if you don't, you're going to end up in this court. You can't just ask people to pour their billions of dollars in your, in your facilities and then wake up one morning and say, oh, well, because I ran around promising people that I will nationalize, I'll just see it through by changing the constitution when I come to office and then nationalize. Well, you can do that if you just go through a due process of, paying them back. Except the question would be, do you have billions? Man, I'm just realizing every day, it's hard to be a president, guys. For those of you that want to be career politicians, are you sure you know what you are getting into? Or you just want to steal money, drive Rupas, and use iPhones with 2 SIM cards? Because this stuff is complicated. And maybe it's just me, but I don't want to sign up for this. I just want to be in the background, just minding my own business, having my own family. Like, I swear. Because this is just nuts. So, facilitating conciliation and arbitration of investment disputes between contracting states and nationals of other contracting states. Nationals. Nationals can mean you and me, but, these guys don't do with individuals, as you can imagine. They do, they work a lot with, because if you look up, the case of their, their court, their case role, you are going to find a lot of companies, some of them I've never heard of, which is makes a lot of sense. There are a lot of companies on this planet. So, let's take a break. We'll continue with this discussion on the other side. And on that side, we're now going to talk about ConocoPhillips and Venezuela. How do I picture how do I draw this picture for you? I have a sneaky suspicion, this whole Venezuela thing, the US is playing the, you know, the role that, here at home, Red Force would be playing. How do I put this? Now, a bunch of foreign investors, American based, most of them, poured a lot of money in Venezuela's oil, oil industry. Halfway through, some guy came to power and decided we are going to nationalize. And they did. Excellent idea. You can imagine how happy the people were. Except the guys that poured money. Let's go way back. The guys that gave their money to ConocoPhillips so that ConocoPhillips can invest that money in Venezuela's oil industry. They started looking at ConocoPhillips and going like, buddy, we don't care how you get it. We just want our money back. Because, you see, well, now the oil industry is nationalized, so now what? ConocoPhillips is like, you know, relax, don't worry, I got this. I know. You know, like one of those, Forex traders that you have here in Namibia that keeps, running around collecting people's money, and then it's either they chop the money or they lose after, they lose their trade. They lose during the trade. And now the people that gave them the money, they're asking for their money back. And they know they don't have the money. So they're like, relax, relax. I got you. I'm going to sort this out. I swear. Like, well, you better. Because, well, you promised me I was going to make like a gazillion dollars of profit on top of the $1 billion I gave you. Therefore, I want my money back. Yeah. That break, then we'll come back, and now that we know who Exit is, and what they do, and by the way, they're homies with the World Bank. Oh no, the Red Force part. If you are a Namibian company, or municipality, or local authority, and a lot of your clients owe you a lot of money, so you want to annoy them into paying, and they're being stubborn to pay, and you want to annoy them so bad that they pay the money they owe you back. What do you do? Easy, just collect your files and then give them to any of the, debt collection companies, and then problem solved. But what happens if you're a multinational oil company, billions of dollars worth of assets on the line? You can't just hand your files, your Venezuela files to Red Force. Who are they going to call? Now, that's where the military now comes in. I swear at this point it's safe to say the American army is in Venezuela to play a Red Force role to collect, they are there on a debt collection campaign for ConocoPhillips. This is fascinating. I'm going to dive deeper on the other side of the break. The time machine with the helmet. Please stay tuned. Oh, you want to stay tuned on this one?
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ripura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angetashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okwene ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali. Ile konderewa mbara etatu natu mbali o etatu batatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is the Time Machine, and this is Eagle FM, and this is Helmet. Now, let's just do ourselves a little bit of a favor here. And just say thank you to Eagle FM, and say thank you to Helmet, because again, the information that is available online about this whole Venezuela thing, not a lot of people are talking about it. That is that narco terrorist, seriously? And y'all believe that? Now, am I an expert at anything? No. Actually, I am an expert at making fun of people, which is exactly what I'm here to do. And I still have a lot of time to basically do that. Now, and then there's one thing now. Now, what are we appreciating Eagle FM for? Well, for having me here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Because you have to understand, when you are in this whole journalism line of work where you have to report on news and strictly news, there are things you can't say for diplomatic reasons. You know, it's one of the reasons why I don't like interviewing public officials. Actually, private officials. You know, I like having researchers for an interview. Because they are speaking from more like, they are more transparent. Because they don't have to worry about their job being on the line. But if you are going to have, a deputy, for example, or any type of executive coming from a public or private company, they are answering your questions with their job in mind. I would do it the exact same way. I'm not spewing the beans and then you risk getting me fired so you can have a nice story. No, absolutely not. That's not how I lose my food. I'll just be giving you what is politically correct. That's where independent reporters, independent researchers now comes in. From yours truly here, fortunately for me, I don't have to worry about any of that. Alright. That's why I really have to behave, because if I lose Eagle FM, it'd be very difficult for me to find an employer who will give me this whole blank check to just go, or just get in there and go bananas. Yes, I work in media space. I'm surrounded by people that either work for, that work either for television stations, radio stations, newspapers, and all those things. Sometimes they listen to my show and go like, "You're allowed to talk about that?" I'm like, "Yeah, pretty much. Actually, I'm allowed to talk about that more than your professional, political correct nonsense." Like, wow. That's interesting. I'm like, oh no, it's beyond interesting. It's beyond interesting. Because people like to sugarcoat things. Sometimes you just have to, well, be out there. Now, let's start with a summary of my Wednesday, my last week Wednesday show. What the heck is that? Un momento. I need that because that's where I'm laying the foundation. Un momento, s'il vous plaît.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral. Yes, found it. Now,
For those of you, okay, first of all, can't believe I wrote that. Now, first of all, if you follow the whole timeline of events, which is why history is very important, people. History is very important. The full scale nationalization of especially Venezuela's oil industry happened in 2007. Actually, that's the nationalization is something that was implemented by yours truly, Hugo Chavez. Maduro's just took over in 2013 after Hugo Chavez died, because when Hugo Chavez was president, Maduro was deputy. So these two guys really trusted each other. So as soon as Hugo Chavez died, Maduro took over and he carried the legacy of the whole nationalization legacy of Hugo Chavez. Again, any country has the right to do with its resources whatever they want. Except a lot of countries find themselves in a lot of traps by either having someone who is very pro-privatization in office, and then that person loses power, and then someone who is anti-nationalization, anti-privatization and pro-nationalization comes into office. And I'm saying anti and pro because these are commonly used languages. Maduro, the guy that was just overthrown, he was pro-nationalization, like the resources of the country belongs to the people, which makes a lot of sense. But the lady who was set to take over, and I don't think that lady is going to take over anymore from, the way things change in politics. Yo, but that lady, if you listen to her, she was first of all, thanking the Israeli Prime Minister. I don't know what that have to do with anything, but, we know that thanks to those e-files, Israel runs the US, and then you know how it plays out. Because thanks to one brilliant science teacher who engineered America's downfall. Science teacher, people, science teacher. Mossad was like, yeah, homie, come here. And some of us didn't know these things, and who was that? Whitney Webb was like, don't worry, I got you. So she writes volume 1 of One Nation Under Blackmail. I was like, oh boy, this is a lot of information. We're going to need volume 2. And also wrote volume 2. And those of us that like geopolitics were like, oh no, just keep writing them, lady. Keep writing them, handing them over here. We're going to read them. And a lot of people want to read WhatsApp status. I mean, you go nuts. And then they start asking questions like, what's going on in Venezuela? And I sit them down and I'm like, now, first we're going to have to go to 1989. First of all, they don't know the year, because they're too young. And then second of all, not just do they not know the year because they're too young, they can't even pronounce Hugo Chavez. Like, yeah, this is going to take a long time. We're going to need coffee and popcorns. Lots of it. So, nationalization is something that was interesting. Because this, for those of you that like history, then you know that in the, is it 1830s, when the British decided to abolish slavery, they had to compensate the people that had invested a lot of money into slavery. I think, when was that? They hadn't paid off those that debt. But first of all, they just borrowed money from some private banks, and then paid that money to investors, and then they owed the money to those banks, and they, they were paying that bill from the 1830s or 1870s to 2005, I believe, or 2015, one of these two. Like in the 2000s, from the 1800s, man, those were the British. That means this whole foreign investor thing is a double-edged sword. If you're going to have foreign investors, you are going to have to read the contracts first before signing. But because of we do things for political clout a lot, what we do is we just take, that's when we go all over newspapers now, you know, investors from China, investors from Russia, investors from the US. I mean, we take pictures and then we take those photos of signing memorandum of understanding, signing trade agreement, signing, and you are signing things left, right, and center. Here's the thing. If you are out of office 5 years down the line and someone who doesn't share your economic ideology takes office and they go against those agreements, you end up with a Venezuela situation on your hands. At least that's one thing I've learned. That's why I'm saying politics. I mean, I want to drive a Mercedes-Benz with two engines. I want to use an iPhone with two SIM cards, but hey, the stakes are high, Baba, high. Really high. So, the stakes are really high. Believe me. All right. Nationalize the oil. Yeah. You see, now it makes sense. Really makes sense. When the late President Hage said, legally, the oil is not ours. And he all went bananas on him. Now, I'm one of those people that believe, he was a very smart man, which is why he had an advanced degree. So when he said legally, he knew what he was talking about. He knew that, even when he was the president at the time, if he decided, you know what, we're going to take our oil back, we would have ended up in ICSID arbitration or conciliation rooms. Now, here's the thing. It costs a lot. It costs a lot, these arbitrations. For ConocoPhillips, the tab that they gave, the legal cost tab that they gave to Venezuela was something to the tune of 20 billion. And the ruling that was made in that legal dispute, the ruling was made in favor against Venezuela and in favor of ConocoPhillips. And the amount of money, not the legal cost, the amount of money that was, that Venezuela was asked to pay was 8.7 billion. All those in US multiplied by 18, give or take. You see, if you are not going to Jacob Zuma, that number. Nationalization? Excellent. But also understand how money operates in this whole thing. If you look at the baseline survey that was, you know, on Namibia's oil industry that was conducted by Deloitte Namibia. Boy, oh boy. To get to full production in this whole oil thing, oh boy, you are going to go a very long time. You are looking at, for Namibia, for example, to get to full production, we're looking at maybe 2035. That's where we are. That's where we are looking. That's actually where I would put my money on 2035. 2030, meh. It's either we are not yet or we are in a rudimentary stage. But a full one, 2030, 2035, 2040, somewhere there. So, it takes a while and billions of dollars. Was that Shell that had to write off billions of dollars because one of the world they were exploring, you know, proved to be economically unviable? Now, say you woke up the next day and said you are going to nationalize it. You think Shell would just, just go like, never mind. Now, even if Shell was nice enough to say, never mind. You think the investors that gave them the money will just go, okay, fine, now it's okay. Yeah, we're just gonna forgive you. Oh yeah, right. Like you would. Yeah. Now, we have got to sort of like, we have got to look at these things like, adults. Let's just be adults about it. Now, you have to understand that, or you also have to factor in the fact that, leaders can also be petty. So can investors. Now, International Arbitration Tribunal orders Venezuela to pay ConocoPhillips $8.7 billion for unlawful expropriation due to nationalization. Throw that in bracket. Of company's oil company, aka ConocoPhillips, investments. Now, where did this start? Well, ConocoPhillips announced in 2019 that the International Arbitration Tribunal, constituted under the auspices of the International Center for Settlement of Investment Dispute, that ICSID thing we just talked about, has unanimously ordered the government of Venezuela to pay the company the amount of $8.7 billion in compensation for the government's unlawful expropriation, nationalization, due to nationalization, of ConocoPhillips' investment in Venezuela in 2007 plus interest. Boy, oh boy! The ICSID tribunal ruled in 2013 that the expropriation of ConocoPhillips' substantial investment in Hamaca and PetroZuata heavy crude oil projects. Now, when I say Hamaca and PetroZuata, now if you don't want to deal with those jargons, think our Mupani, you know, well, or what's that? What are we giving these oil wells here? Think of it like that. They invested in two offshore and one onshore. We're still in Venezuela. Relax. We're not in that conundrum yet. I'm just pointing out that when you have multinational companies pouring this amount of money, all you just have to do is look at Namibia's oil industry and look at how many multinational companies are involved and how much money each of them had poured into exploration and as they go further until we reach drilling and full production. How much money they have poured in. And ask yourself, even if you come 2040, 2060, president wakes up and decides, I'm going to nationalize. You're going to have to think about where you're going to get all those billion dollars to refund them, or you're going to end up, you know, seeing, you know, Red Force-ish type of, you know, fireworks, you know, like above your capital city with a bunch of guys storming in, kidnap your president. Well, we know the drill. This is very fresh. A lot of presidents are still shaking as we speak, I imagine, which is why everyone is going, I condemn. Like, okay, why are you condemning? Why are you running? Now, where are we? The ICSID tribunal ruled in 2013 that the expropriation of ConocoPhillips' substantial investment in Hamaca and PetroZuata, heavy crude oil projects and the offshore Korokoro, that's the offshore one. The PetroZuata and Hamaca, those ones are onshore from the look of things. Because they're only specific about the onshore one. About the onshore. That's a fancy way of saying on land. Offshore means it's the middle of the sea somewhere. Like most of Namibia's oil exploration is taking place about what, like 270, 300 kilometers offshore. That means if you are standing in, somewhere in Walvis Bay, face the ocean and imagine the distance from where you are standing. Picture 270, 300 kilometers. How do I put this? If you are in Grootfontein, You see that distance between Grootfontein, you know, from Grootfontein to Gam? Give or take a few 5-10 kilometers. That distance, that's how far our oil is from the shore. A point of correction. That's far, legally, not our oil is from the shore. Our oil here, right. Moving on. Okay, fine. Let's start over. Where are we? The ICSID tribunal ruled in 2013 that the expropriation of ConocoPhillips' substantial investment in the Hamaca and Petrozata heavy oil projects and the offshore Korokoro development project violated international law. That was my favorite part. Violation, the nationalization, and actually, now the nationalization was against international law. But the kidnapping was sent. And the bombing, it wasn't. The nationalization against international law. Bombing, no. You have to understand this, this tribunal is based in the US. The US people, the US made a ruling in a dispute between Venezuela and ConocoPhillips, and they said, Venezuela, the nationalization of your oil industry made ConocoPhillips lose billions of dollars worth of investment, which we all know that according to this whole ICSID thing, which you signed up for, it's illegal. So, which is also part of international law. It's the law, people. The law is speaking here. That was in 2013. Fast forward to 2025. Now we're just gonna kidnap the guy and break the international law we told them to uphold. Don't you just love having a big army? Because, well, you just, you start negotiating like a tura boy. KMA with the right hand. And if the right hand and KMA are not working, you come in with the exalio stick with the left hand. If you don't KMA. Easy. Life is very easy. Now, the current ruling, we're still in 2013 here. The current ruling addresses compensation and timing and manner of collection remains to be determined. Now, here's the thing. If you are going to sue Helmut, for example, for making fun of you, and then the court makes a ruling that, we're in a civil court. Now, the court makes a ruling that, Helmut, you must pay this person who's, tiny little feelings you did hit on your the time machine, Mind the Gap show. Now you have to compensate them, and you have to pay them $100,000. I don't even have $1,000. Now then, that presents you with a problem. Yes, the court ruled on your side. Yes, the court asked me to pay $100,000. But there's one problem. Do I look like I have $100,000? No, I don't. So, how are you going to get your money back? See? That's where the military comes in. Very important. Now, this is just a, comedy suspicion. Not saying anything. Not saying anything. You know, no wonder they say, look at the money. The money discussion is even more juicier than the political part of narco-terrorism I behind. Which narco-terrorism? Yeah. Now. Yeah, plus interest be determined. Now, the time of allocation, the time of collection. Now, the court made a ruling that $8.7 billion must be paid. Now, where is Venezuela, a country that is drowning in sanctions already? How are they going to make $8.7 billion to settle this bill? That's a difficult one. That's the conundrum that they found themselves in. But at this point, you're wondering, why can't they just ignore it? Well, you can if you are the United States. Which makes us put a pause on that. Let's talk, about the United States for a while. Why am I saying you can if you are the United States? Easy. The U.S. to this day still owes Nicaragua reparation money. In the 1980s, the U.S., backed up a bunch of terrorist guys that called, the Sandinista army that were fighting the M23 of the 1980s Nicaragua at the time. In the very same way that Rwanda has been alleged of backing up in a lot of ways, not just financially, militarily, M23. Well, the same thing that was claimed in the 1980s by Nicaragua. This is also a country in South America. To the International Court of Justice. This is the legal arm of the United Nations, not to be confused with the International Criminal Court, which is a much more separate from the United Nations, even though in its implementation, UN played a very significant role. But now, just to understand that, ICC, International Court of Justice, prosecutes individuals. They prosecute individuals. Mostly individuals. The International Court of Justice prosecutes states. This was Nicaragua versus United States. Oh, yeah. We're going to take a break. And we'll get back to... the ICSID here made a ruling that Venezuela must pay $8.7 billion for their nationalization that made ConocoPhillips lose their investment that they poured into Venezuela's oil industry. Now, you have to understand, this is not from a Venezuela's perspective. As you can imagine, if you can get this information from Venezuela's standpoint, you'll get a whole different story. Except that information is not easy to find. But don't worry. We got this.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back. So, 2013, ICSID rules in favor of ConocoPhillips for Venezuela to pay $8.7 billion to ConocoPhillips for the loss incurred during their investment before the nationalization of Venezuela's oil industry. So, the question is, asking someone to pay versus them having the ability to pay are two different things. Unfortunately. Even if they have the ability to pay, if you don't have an army to make them pay, then, well, to force them or some kind of, motivation mechanism that, to motivate them to pay, then it's kind of, a little difficult. It's kind of difficult, a little difficult to pull through. Now, That reminded me of Nicaragua versus United States case, which has been my favorite case over why having a very strong army is important. Because in the case concerning the military and paramilitary activities and in and against Nicaragua, and that's the case of Nicaragua versus United States, was a case where the International Court of Justice held that the U.S. had violated international law by supporting the Contras in their rebellion against the Sandinistas and by mining Nicaragua's harbors. It's always about resources. Now, the case was decided in favor of Nicaragua and against the United States with an awarding of reparations. The court had 15 final decisions upon which it voted. The court found in its verdict that the United States was in breach of obligations under customary international law not to use force against another state. Why does that sound awfully familiar? Oh, look, it happened this week. Not to use force against another state. Oh, no, not only did they use force, they kidnapped the president. They abducted the president of that nation, sending shivers down the spine of every sitting president, I imagine. And also, yeah, not to intervene in its affairs. Huh? Really? Did they really know who they were talking about? Not to violate its sovereignty, not to interrupt peaceful maritime commerce. You remember before the bombing in Venezuela started, there were ships, there were oil tankers that were being boarded by U.S. special forces. And, Trump was like, no, actually we're going to sell the oil that we just stole. Piracy, you know, nothing new. Now, in breach of its obligation under Article 10, 11, 20 what? Roman numeral sometimes sends my head spinning. Of the Treaty of Friendship. Now, that's something that made me rolling. Sent me down, I almost fell off my bed. Turns out there's something called Treaty of Friendship. Treaty of Friendship for politicians. What were these people thinking? There are no friends in politics. The only thing that's, actually, the point of correction, there are friends in politics. There are just no permanent friends in politics. The only thing that's permanent is interest. That has been made clear, at least. Now, comments and navigation between the parties signed at Managua on the 21st of January, 1956. The court was basically saying that, look, okay, before we get to the court, the background and history of U.S. intervention in Nicaragua, the background and history of U.S. intervention in a lot of countries, we can do this the whole year, literally. But we don't have that time. We really don't have that time. But also we also need a break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurani ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete ofoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doinawa nuneudo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ilinawa ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kombelewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. It's quarter to 9, and let's dive in. If you are familiar with Operation Timber Sycamore, of how the U.S. decided, you know what, we don't really like this Assad guy, this Bashar al-Assad of Syria. There is a bunch of rebels, if you ask the Syrians, that are, you know, very angry at the Assad's regime. How about we just give them a lot of money and a lot of guns? And they did. Now that's Operation Timber Sycamore was implemented, during the Obama administration, and now it's just public knowledge. That's not the first time that the U.S. just decided to use a bunch of armed guys to overthrow, at least try to overthrow a president. And not the first time. Again, for the millionth time, guys, this is not an American thing. This is an imperial thing. It's what empires do. Empires build by looting, actually lying first, and then looting, then building, and then more lying in the process. But basically, lying is the foundation. They lie when they're lying, they lie when they're looting, they lie when they're building, and then they lie when they're maintaining the infrastructure they build from all the lying and looting and building. That's how you become an empire. The British did the exact same thing. You do realize you and I are, you know, going to church on Sunday because we were here to civilize us. And also we're, you know, casting demons and singing, dancing in church every Sunday because partly because the British decided, you know what, let's take some civilization to these guys. And they were less civilized than we are. They were way less civilized. Actually, we were more civilized than they were. Less civilized they were less civilized. We were more civilized because the things they did was not something you'd expect from a civilized group of people. Well, give you, one example. First of all, they stole a lot of artifacts, and then they decided to take it to Britain. And then in the 1960s, when they realized that a lot of countries are now gaining their independence, they will soon come asking for their, for their ancestral artifacts and artifacts. They decided to come up with a British Museum Act that, in summary, basically says that you can't come and claim or steal back the things that we stole from you. Well, I mean, we stole it, but when we stole it, it was, you know, it was legal when we stole it. Now that we have made it illegal, you can't come and steal it back. Who's defining the word legality here? We are, not you. We know that you didn't want us to steal it, so basically, it was illegal even when we stole it, but, I mean, come on, that was a long time ago. But now things are different. Now we are civilized than we thought, than we were back then. That's why I'm not going on a heist with the British. I mean, you guys make terrible thieves, because not only did they steal this stuff, they also decided to put it in a giant house. And not only that, which was also open to the public to go and see, and they went even further. I mean, British, you guys are terrible at stealing. If you have a British friend, please don't go on a heist with them, because imagine a British who is a Tura boy. Every time that they grab an iPhone, they put it in a kambashu that's open for everyone to come and see, and that iPhone is in a glass box. And they labeled the time that they grabbed it, the battery percentage when they grabbed it, and the person they grabbed it from, and the date that they grabbed it, and then, you know, but the people they grabbed the phone from can only, they are only allowed to come and look at the phone. They are not allowed to take it. That's how the British Museum sounds to me. But the funny thing is, if Tura Boys did that, we'd be laughing at them, like, how dumb are these guys? Well, the British Museum is exactly that. Which is why when a lot of those artifacts went missing last year and they appealed to the public to help them find the stolen artifacts that were stolen from the British Museum, the internet went bananas, like, so, let me get this straight. You want me to help you find, help you find stolen stuff that you stole? Is that what you're talking about here? It turns out they were not even joking. They were not joking. They were just being honest. They're like, yeah, we know we stole it. We know. We get that. We stole it. But that was a long time ago. Plus, now we have a law that says it's not okay for you to steal it from us, even though we stole it from you. What's there not to understand? Well, short answer, Great Britain, everything. Now, back to the US. The first armed intervention this is not the first time, guys. This is not the first time this is happening. All you just have to do is read up something called Chiquita Bananas. That would be Honduras. Also South America, by the way. You gotta love history. But anyway, the first armed intervention by the United States in Nicaragua occurred under President Taft. I know. Something that I thought was turns out they had their 27th president is a guy named William Howard Taft. He was the 27th president of the United States from 1909 to 1913. It's like saying from 2000 to 2000. Yeah, 2009 to 2013. But in the 20th century type of things. We're in the 21st. Now, in 1909, he ordered the overthrow of course, there is going to be overthrow of Nicaragua's president, Jose Santos Zelaya. Now, during August and September 1912, the contingent of 2,300 U.S. Marines, why does that sound familiar? Now, Marines landed at the port of Corinto, pardon my Spanish here, Corinto and occupied Leon, the railway line to Granada. A pro-U.S. government was formed under the occupation. Of course! What did Trump say? We'll just run Venezuela from now until what? This is from 1909, Nicaragua. And people are shocked. Oh, it's new. I'm like, oh my God. But okay, fine. You all better start advertising with Eagle FM because, they are paying me a lot of money to actually. Turns out I'm high maintenance. Where do you think the energy comes from? The government was formed under occupation, under that occupation in 1914. The Brian Chomorrow Treaty was granted perpetual canal rights to the U.S. in Nicaragua and was signed 10 days before the U.S. operated the Panama Canal opened for use. Nothing happens by accident in politics, for if it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. That was President Roosevelt. U.S. again. 1927 under Augusto Sandino, a major peasant uprising was launched against both the U.S. occupation and the Nicaraguan establishment installed by the U.S. Now, 1933, the Marines withdrew and left Nicaragua's National Guard in charge and the international security and elections, internal security and elections. Now, 1934, Anastasio Garcia, The head of the National Guard ordered his forces to capture and murder Sandino. In 1937, Somoza assumed the, not Somoza, Somoza. There's a difference. I'm hungry too. Now, Somoza assumed the presidency while still in control of the National Guard and established the dictatorship that his family controlled until 1979. What happened in 1953 after Mohammed Musa takes overthrow in Iraq? Aha, Shah Pahlavi comes to power and runs the country for 20 plus years. A dictator is only bad if that dictator is standing in between an empire and its access to that country's resources. That's a bad dictator. But a dictator that gives an empire access to its resources, it doesn't matter how many people that dictator is killing in that country. That's a good dictator. Now that we are on the same level of understanding the definition of the word dictator. Let's talk about, even though they're dictators, they are good dictators and bad dictators. Yeah. See, it's very important. It's important to understand the language. Now, the downfall of the regime now attributed to the embezzlement of millions. So, of course, there are always embezzlements. I mean, Shah Pahlavi had enough money to tell Mercedes-Benz, oh yeah, you know what? My army needs a type of a car that is both comfortable and rugged. You know, that's showing, you know, tough guy and also very luxury and a je ne sais quoi and flamboyant feel to it. Mercedes-Benz was like, say no more. That's what gave birth to your G-Wagon. You're welcome. Now, moving on. The downfall of the regime is attributed to its embezzlement of millions, to the regime's embezzlement of millions in foreign aid that was given to the country in response to devastating 1972 earthquake. Homeboy was just chopping money. At this point, you say, who'd steal money from earthquake victims? Are you listening to what's going on in South Africa? Tembisa Hospital. People are literally dying in hospital. Nurses are working without proper equipment so someone can afford Lamborghinis. That's black on black. That's why I don't subscribe to this whole idea of everything, something like this taking place. Oh, it's a white versus black. No, it's not. No, it's not. Greed is universal. Greed knows no skin color. You will find less greed white people and even greedy as heck white people. Same for black people, same for Asians. I mean, this is all across the board. Yeah, moving on. Many moderate supporters of the dictatorship began abandoning it in the face of growing revolutionary sentiments. Now, the Sandinistas movement organized relief began to expand its influence and assumed the leadership of the revolution. They're about to take over their country from a dictatorship installed that was very good at stealing money. It stole earthquake relief funds from its people. Yeah. It's very important. History is important. History is everything. If you don't do history. So, a dictator that's very good at chopping money is kicked out of, is facing this, call it anti-dictatorship. I'm gonna say anti-government, but anyway, anti-dictatorship movement that's being run by the guys that call themselves the Sandinista. Now, the Sandinistas, was a Sandinista National Liberation Front. Was a socialist political party in Nicaragua, and this was a political party, and the members that called themselves basically Sandinistas. So the Sandinistas takes over, Sandinistas they are threatening the regime at this point. So the movement now organized a relief and began to expand its influence and assumed leadership of the revolution. And a popular uprising at this point is basically sweeping across the country and fast forward, sweeping across the country to the point where that they come to power in 1979. Their guy who gave them access, blank check to the country's natural resources is now not in the country. It's not in charge of the country now. And of course, as you can imagine, the US really, 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 really liked that, but the opposite way. Now, the United States had long been opposed, had long opposed the socialist, of course, you know. Isn't that the reason why they don't like Mamdani? Call him socialist, blah, blah, blah. Now, the mayor of New York. Now, the current mayor of New York. Now, after the revolution, the Carter, Jimmy Carter administration moved quickly to support the Sandinistas with financial and material aid. When Ronald Reagan took office, oh, that is one interesting guy. We can do a whole show on him, but we don't have time for that. I know we have an hour. Believe me, it's not enough time. We still have to come back to Venezuela. And the money part, we're talking about the money here, not the politics. When it comes to Venezuela, we're talking about the money. And how I believe the U.S. Army is basically being used to play what would call the equivalent of Red Force role here. They are just there to collect debt that one of the multinational companies, you know, well invested in Venezuela, and now Venezuela is playing hard to get. So they decided to go in hard and get him. Go in hard. I'm sorry. My dirty mind is going, ooh, bananas. And anyway, now, when Reagan took office, he augmented the direct support of an anti-Satanista group. Called the Contras, which included, factions loyal to the former dictator. Now, when Congress prohibited further funding to the Contras, Oliver North continued the funding through arms sales that were also prohibited by Congress. Now, who was Oliver North? Was an American politician, political commentator, television host. You see, now, this is why I just decided to point that out, because it's giving, you know, Zelensky vibes. A television host, military historian, and a retired U.S. Marine Corps lieutenant. It just decided, you know what, this is, how do I put this, plausible deniability. It works all the time. Works all the time. Works all the time. That anti, the change of the U.S. Government, from supporting the Contras, the Sandinistas during the Carter regime, switch, you know, fast forward to the Reagan administration, they are like, you know what, we don't like these Contra guys. They're not giving us access. We need access, Baba, access. We need access. So they decide to switch teams and, start supporting the opposition, the guys that were pro the dictators that was just kicked out of office by the Sandinistas. The guys that, gave the bunch of multinational companies from countries we won't mention, blank check. So, Because of that, the Sandinistas were now in power, and they realized that their opposition had this interesting enough, very new equipment, new uniform, new tactical fighting skills. Are like, hey, where are these guys learning from? Why does this look familiar? Oh, Krav Maga. Ooh, Krav Maga, Israeli. Now, they were like, aren't these American weapons? We have a sneaky suspicion this is American money. So they decided, you know what, we're going to go to the International Court of Justice. They went to the International Court of Justice, filed in a case that America is interfering in our, in our relations, that they are funding a bunch of guys that are fighting our regime. And the International Court of Justice now ruled in favor of Nicaragua. They were asked to pay reparations. Oh, boy. At this point, you're asking yourself one question. Did they pay that reparation? No. Because the question is, what are you going to do? I know the court said I should pay, but I won't. And what are you going to do about it? That decision was made in 1986. How old are you? If you how old is someone that was born in 1986? That's how old that case is. That's how old that decision is. But I guess if you are, you know, if you have a strong army, then you can just say, well, I know the court made a decision. And the organization that runs the court that made this decision needs operational funding, most of which comes from us. So, I mean, we have a better standing ground here. So, I don't think you guys have a lot of options. So, and we get back to from the 19 something, then we can now just come straight to the, let's come back to the 2000s now, shall we? Now, let's get back to the 2000s. We start with that case, the case between Venezuela and ConocoPhillips. When that ruling of the ruling that ICSID made compelling, you know, giving Venezuela an obligation, giving them a legal obligation to pay $8.7 billion in compensation to ConocoPhillips. The following was said by a ConocoPhillips representative. We welcome the ICSID tribunal's decision. I mean, I would have said the same thing. Which upholds the principle that governments cannot unlawfully expropriate private investments without paying compensation, said Kelly B. Rose, Senior Vice President, Legal General Counsel, and the Corporate Secretary of ConocoPhillips. Now, the reason why you only find this information in Eagle FM is because I have 2 hours and 30 minutes to talk about it. You can't talk about that in 8 o'clock news because it's a lot. Now, in April of 2018, in a separate independent legal action, an international arbitration tribunal instituted under the rules of International Chamber of Commerce, ICC, not to be confused with International Court of Justice, awarded again ConocoPhillips approximately $2 billion from Petro Laos de Venezuela. It turns out this, the $8.7 billion was of a dispute between ConocoPhillips and Venezuela. This one, Venezuela as a state. Now, this $2 billion was a separate dispute, somewhat, and I'm saying somewhat because this was between Venezuela between ConocoPhillips and Petroleos de Venezuela. How do I put this? This would be like let's bring this home. The $8.7 billion is like that one was in a dispute between labeled as a dispute between Namibia and Shell, but the second dispute of that Shell was awarded $2 billion was was a dispute between Shell and Namco. See the difference? Shell, Namibia for nationalizing, and Shell and Namco. Because, these two, when they signed a bunch of contracts when they came to this business agreement, which the nationalization, made, unfortunately, Namco to basically throw every caution to the wind and go like, I know we signed and agreed to this and these terms, but, things change. Just get used to it. Something like that. So, April 2018, in a separate independent legal action, an international arbitration tribunal constituted under the rules of International Chamber of Commerce awarded ConocoPhillips approximately $2 billion from Petroleos de Venezuela. That's their version of Namco back in Venezuela. Venezuela still the state-owned oil company and two of its subsidiaries. The ICC tribunal ruling arose from PDVSA, that's the abbreviation of that of Venezuela's NAMCO, call it that. The ICC's tribunal ruling arose from PDVSA's failure to uphold its contractual commitments in response to Venezuela's unlawful expropriation of ConocoPhillips' investment in Jamaica Petrozuata projects. And in August 2018, ConocoPhillips announced that it entered into a settlement agreement with PDVSA, the Venezuela's state-owned oil company, to recover the full amount owed under their word. And, boy, does it go juicier than that. Now, ConocoPhillips also had a pending contractual ICC arbitration case against PDVSA related to Korokoro project. That's the onshore one. Two offshore, one onshore. Now, in the early 1990s, Venezuela created a new fiscal framework to induce foreign investment in its heavy oil project in the Orinoco belt and elsewhere. You know how Zambia has a copper belt? Well, it turns out Venezuela has an oil belt. Now, relying on these terms, ConocoPhillips helped Venezuela develop the Petrozuata, Jamaica, and the Corococo projects by providing industry leading technology, substantial long term investment to the government of Venezuela. Now this is in 1990 to the government of Venezuela. However, in the summer of 2007, Venezuela's government expropriated ConocoPhillips' investment in their entirety. Without compensation. Now, this is coming from ConocoPhillips' website, so take that with a pinch of salt. Because if I was writing, if I was telling a story about my dispute with you, you can imagine how good I will portray my side. So, the bottom line here is the last part. It indicates what basically a lot of countries go through, which is the process that Namibia is right now, because we talk about, needing more foreign direct investors. Foreign investors, please just come and invest in Namibia. So, in the 1990s, when we were just nearing the dawn of our, democratic dispensation, that was Venezuela. It turns out that they opened their doors and said, you have money to invest. We have the resources to invest in. Come in. And presidents change. That's the thing. Because presidents there are a lot of different political parties, and different political parties have different point of view on how the country should be run both politically and economically. So, in five years, things can change from, pro-privatization to anti-privatization. These guys basically went through. They went through that process. Yeah. So, why, ConocoPhillips, why are you so angry about this? I mean, it's just an investment. They're going to pay your money anyway. Or what type of investment did you pour in this type of things? Well, here's the thing. This is a very strong statement being made here. There's something in contract law called misrepresentation, where you are not giving me a full story to the agreement, and you are not giving me full information. That means I'm agreeing to your terms of this agreement because of the information that you have given me. If you are giving me, or if you are only giving me 50% of information, fast forward, if we end up in a dispute and you are telling me, no, there are this and this and this and this information I was supposed to give you, but my bad, I just totally forgot, then you misrepresented me. If you gave me a full story, maybe I would not have agreed to the agreement. I would not have signed the agreement. Now, that's what, in a lot of words, that ConocoPhillips is claiming here. Misrepresentation. In contract law, legal disputes, you hear that word a lot. Yeah. Let's take a break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendi fenawa nukumuna oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fanoa na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa mura etatu natu bali o etatu batatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
And welcome back. And we continue. 16 past the hour of 9. If you just tuned in, this is yours truly, Helmut, on Eagle FM. And this is the Time Machine. And we went through history now, didn't we? We went through history as usual. That's just awesome. So, it is important to understand that before you invite investors, be mindful of what happens if you wake up one morning and you are not in office and someone who is has a different economic and economic plans in mind make a decision contrary to one that you have made. What's going to happen to your country? The reason why I pointed out the Nicaragua versus United States case is that if you are a big country, nothing happens to you even if you are asked by the world's court to pay reparations for funding a bunch of rebels to try and overthrow a government. Nothing happens to you. But if you are a small country, hey, your president gets kidnapped. It's very clear at this point. Very clear. Guys, please market with Eagle FM. Because sometimes when I say a bunch of nonsense like that, I'm reminded again that how many stations? Yeah. Man, I don't know about you, but for us, we are enjoying when it comes to some of this information. So, the whole, misrepresentation that's being claimed here in a paragraph. It's being claimed in a paragraph. In the early 90s, Venezuela created a new fiscal framework to induce foreign investment in its heavy oil projects in Orinoco Belt and elsewhere. Relying on these terms, that's the key phrase. Relying on these terms, claims ConocoPhillips. Relying on these terms, ConocoPhillips helped Venezuela develop its Corococo projects by providing the followings: industry leading technology and substantial long-term investments to the government of Venezuela. However, in summer of 2007, the Venezuelan government expropriated ConocoPhillips' investment in their entirety without compensation. Exit had the case. You want to guess where it took place? Of course, United States. How transparent was it? I have no idea, and frankly, I don't care. But industry-leading technology. Oil refineries in the southern part of the U.S. that we're talking about, the ones that were made to refine heavy fuel, heavy oil, they cannot refine America's light oil, which is why America is one of the biggest exporter of unrefined oil. They export a lot of it. Now you're wondering, if they have it in their ground, why don't they just refine theirs? It's because, well, for the most part, their refineries are not designed to refine the oil that they have underground. Because it was discovered, I think, some years after they've already built the refineries. And a refinery is a piece of infrastructure that costs multi-billion dollars to build. And change it to, change it from refining light oil, heavy oil to light oil is also going to cost billions. I'm pretty sure they have this money to basically change all this, but shareholders are like, nah, there's an easier way. Just go in there and kidnap a sovereign nation's president. That actually sets precedents. Very terrible precedents. Ever since the war between Russia and Ukraine started, a lot of countries, especially after the change in administration in the U.S. from Biden to Trump, one thing that we have been witnessing, dominating headlines in a lot of, in Europe, especially is how do we continue funding Ukraine to fight? So then they came up with a brilliant idea that, in Brussels came up with a brilliant idea. This is the European Union. That how about, all these Russia's frozen assets in billions, tens of billions. How about we just, take these assets and then invest them in different investment ventures. And then money that's accruing from these investments, we take that money and then, give it an interest-free loans to Ukraine. And first of all, Belgium and France did not like that idea by a tiny bit. Well, because their biggest fear is that once you do that, first of all, you risk retaliation from Russia. Two, you start spooking people that are investing their assets in your financial institutions. In this case, especially France was very jumpy about it. So, France fear is a very necessary one. That's one that is actually going to get a lot of diplomats talking right now. Like, is this what's going to happen? When, the question here is, should we allow private interest to use established nations' militaries to go on a debt collection spree? This is the question that is being whispered way below, and that way below in the regions of political uncorrectness. That's where I am. If you are listening, that's where you and I are. This whole thing of, we are still waiting at 3 o'clock, Donald Trump will now give a speech. Donald Trump is not going to mention ConocoPhillips. Why? Because, well, this is something that has been going on for a while. And, the first ruling was made in 2018 and a different one, 2013, and a different one was made in 2018. Not a lot of us have taken interest in Venezuela until now, until the whole, tensions, but I swear, pick a newspaper, read watch all this news. They are all about politics, Maduro, Venezuela, Maduro, Venezuela, US Trump, Maduro, Venezuela. There's a lot of private interest involved that no one is talking about. But lucky for you, because of your geniusness of picking the right radio station to listen to, now you know they said that the whole political fuss but the whole political, call it meandering going on, is just to obscure the real agenda. The money part. Because there's a lot of money involved. Again, running a military the size of the US military costs a lot. Now, if you were president of that country, you'd obviously need a lot of money to run a military like that. Just where do you get that money? Like, from your private company? Yeah, well, duh. How does, that means you must be willing to do anything. I mean, anything. To, you know, protect your country's, you know, your countrymen. Not just for the kickbacks, but also for your military. But okay, fine. Mostly for the kickbacks. Mostly for the kickbacks. And this is where I like, was that Edgar Lungu who ran for office with a slogan of, with a slogan of money in the pocket. Now, when I was there in 2017, when I was in Zambia in 2017, I met very good Zambian friends who were just laughing about it. And my uncle kept laughing at them because, you know, they were more acquainted with each other than I was because I was new then. My uncle was like, so when your president was running for office and for the millionth time, and he was saying, money in the pocket, y'all made a mistake of not asking him whose pocket. Because now that he's in office and he's putting all the money in his pocket, you can't blame him because you should have asked when he was running for office, your excellency, when you say money in the pocket, whose pocket are we talking about, yours or mine? Because if it's yours, I'm not voting. If it's mine, then we can talk about it. I'm not saying if it's mine, I'm going to vote, but we can talk about it because you will have to explain what assurance you're going to put in place to make sure that you don't swindle me after the election, which politicians are well known for. Tinder swindler. Then there's natural resources swindler. That's America. Industry-leading technology. By the way, the article I'm reading is from 2019, before COVID. Yeah. International Arbitration Tribunal orders Venezuela to pay ConocoPhillips $8.7 billion for unlawful expropriation of company's oil investments. Again, 2017, and again, 2019. And you have ICSID and their, you know, ICSID convention. We've been through that. And you have Sandinistas been through that. Nicaragua, blah, blah, blah. And this case was filed in 2007. When the nationalization really went full scale. Now, this was the respondent was Venezuela, or officially known as the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. I didn't know that until last night. The home state's investor, Netherlands. Where did the case take place? Home state investor, Netherlands. Investor. Home state investor. How about this? This whole diplomatic relation thing is, it's important to read between the lines because it's very easy to be swindled. Now, anyone that's interested in business, pardon me, understands is that in the corporate world, there is a lot of backstabbing. In the corporate world, there is a lot of backstabbing. There's a lot of backstabbing that takes place in the corporate world. And ConocoPhillips is the biggest player of one of the biggest players in the corporate world. They know that. They've played this game like, you know, like a billion times. So, So I was just curious, so I decided to go on this whole website to look at how many cases do they have active right now that are pending between private companies and sovereign nations. Oh boy, they have 1,116 cases that are all pending. There's a company called Nimba Investment LLC and others. There's the Republic of Guinea. They are not specific as to which Guinea. And then there's No Holdings Limited with People's Democratic Republic of Algeria. And you have Republic of Kenya versus Travazori Border Security. They have Colombia is there, Republic of Bangladesh, Romania, Republic of Chile, United States, United Mexican States. Republic of Guinea, Ukraine is on there, people, Ukraine. And Republic of Ecuador, also the Republic of Cyprus is there. Now, this is my favorite part. Now, there's a company called Pan African Energy Tanzania Limited, Tanzania Limited, that is in a dispute that has been concluded. They were in dispute with the United Republic of Tanzania and the Tanzania Petroleum Development Corporation. Read the agreement. It's going to have like a million pages, but gather your lawyers. Read them. You're welcome. Moving on. Pan African Energy also, decided to start, we are not done with this. Now, Pan Africa Energy Corporation, Pan Africa Energy Tanzania Limited, sued the heck out of Tanzania, the country. And the case was, Pan Africa Energy Tanzania Limited, sued the heck out of, Tanzania, the country, and the case was concluded. Maybe one of them was not happy, especially Pan Africa Energy Tanzania had decided, you know what, on second thought, we're going back to exit. So they went back. Now the case is pending. Enwell Energy versus Ukraine, and then Buried Hill Sun Limited versus Turkmenistan, Republic of Panama, Ukraine, United Kingdom, Montenegro. I'm just looking for, African countries here. Peru, that's in South America. You have Ukraine, you have, Niger, the one with a military junta. That one. If you were reading between the lines when I was going through the Sandinista story, then you know that Niger is Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali. Those guys are going to have terrorist activities active in that region for a very long time. Why? In Nicaragua, the U.S. backed up a dictator. When the Sandinistas overthrew the dictator, the U.S. started backing the what you'd call the terrorist guys that were fighting the Sandinistas that took over the government. So, whoever lost billions of dollars worth of investment and interest and looting interest in Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali, you can bet they're going to start doing this the exact same thing, paying a bunch of trigger-happy, hungry guys to go and fight their own people. And unfortunately, it works all the time. Works like a charm. Now, you have Dirk Andres in the capacity of insolvency administrator regarding the assets of HBH. That is a pending case with Algeria. Now, Niger has two pending cases, two with the same company. This is a long list, believe me. So you can just look it up on your own. Very long one. So the UAE is in there for their own case. Belgium is in there. Uruguay, Turkmenistan, Panama, Uruguay, Serbia, Peru, Angola. Ricardo Filimino Duarte Ventura Leitao Machado. That's the case. The one with a very long name. That's a company with a very long name that is having a pending case with Angola. All right. Momento. Now, they're having a pending case with a Republicish de Angolano and there we go. Now, it turns out that's the name of a person that owns a company that is called Energia SA, an Angolan company based in Luanda, operating primarily in engineering service and industry. So this is like that Tanzania versus Tanzania thing that's going on here. So it's a so this ICSID guys are busy because they have 1,116 cases. Angola is one of those countries that looked awfully familiar, well, because they are our neighbor. Rome Resources PLC and IM Minerals Limited, Republic of Mozambique, that one is concluded. Thank heavens! And then they are dealing with their own tuna bone scandal. So now you have, Argentina is there, Senegal is there also with a concluded case of NGE contracting and Leduc. Denmark is there, case concluded, and Georgia, now, South Sudan, that's, but I went like, what's South Sudan doing here? Well, it's an energy thing. It's an energy thing. A lot of countries here are South American countries. I swear. It's, I keep running into, it's either South Americans and South American companies, but for African countries, it's just Algeria. I don't know what Algeria is doing, but, whoever is managing the resources there, someone is, closing their eyes and then signing. Cameroon is there. Then you have AVZ International Pty Ltd, Deathcon Mining SA, and Green Lithium Holding Pte Ltd. That case is also a pending one with an African country, mining and lithium. If you guessed Democratic Republic of Congo, then bingo, you got it. Now, Nigeria is there, also in their own Korean National Oil Corporation. This is Nigeria. And you have Republic of Tunisia and Zenith Energy Africa. Now, I'm telling you, the guys at ICSID are busy. SIA something service with Norway also. That one is also concluded. If the Kingdom of the Netherlands, Belgium, Republic of Honduras, then you have a bunch. I'm like going like, please, Namibia, don't be here. Please, Namibia, don't be here. But then, there are 50 pages. Like, they could have just made it in the form of a PDF because now I have to go next. No one has time and energy for that. But we have 22 minutes left to the hour of 10, not 11, to the hour of 10. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and basically summarize this whole thing up and then call it a day. Thank you for tuning into The Time Machine with Helmed on Equal FM, where we are just on the money. Since, well, I figured no one is talking about the money. Everyone is obsessed with the politics of president and wife against international law. America knows that. Why? It's because they did the same thing to Panama. And they did the same thing. Yeah, actually, they did the same thing to Panama. Like, literally, they kidnapped the president on pretty much the same charges of drug, narco, blah, blah, blah. You can go back to, was that yesterday's show? I think it was yesterday or Friday, one of these two.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna erito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngejepa omarude dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo iri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, the terrible judicial precedence being set here is one that is very simple. The message being sent here can easily be construed as if you are a country that does not have nukes like North Korea and Pakistan, and you don't have a strong enough army to defend yourself against big countries, then big countries can just, militarily come in, kidnap your president, and just go about their day. That's the example being set here. You don't have to say. The practical part of things is basically like there's things you don't have to say. You just have to act a certain way, then everyone can draw a conclusion that this is terrible. Now, it's so terrible because of what it means for the international rule-based order. That means it's being slowly sectioned off. Very soon, like at this point, what that means is, if international law doesn't apply anymore, then there are no dictators. There are no dictators. They are just people running their country in a way that they see fit. Not in a way that you see fit. No, in a way that they see fit. That means, it's my house, my rules. That puts, that's why I kept saying yesterday that, during the Mind the Gap show that, I really feel pity for the UN. I mean, I feel pity for FIFA because now the US has to host the 2026 World Cup come June. But what does that, what message is that going to send to the whole world? Because FIFA right now is still fighting for its reputation against not banning, about not banning Israel. The same way that it did Russia. And now, the pressure is getting worse. Because now we're talking about who? Well, the US, and these two are allies, by the way. So, that's why I say D. If I was the president, I'll be checking up on the American embassy. Like, I won't even send anyone. I'll just, get a convoy. Let's go to the embassy. Like, every 5 minutes, you'll be seen here. Are you guys okay? Did you have lunch? Are you sure? No, just checking. Yeah. Tell the president I said hi. And we're good here. We're good here with all the company. And like you can see, we gave you guys a very, this land is, we have not given anyone the land this big. But if you want to expand, just tell us. I mean, what are friends for, right? Oh, yeah, boy. This is exactly why I'm an advocate of, if you want your resources safe, build an army. You do that. Throw nukes here and there. But build an army. Very important. And then there's one part that was actually pointed out about this whole Venezuela thing. How did the U.S. Special Forces manage to get in and out of there in less than an hour and kidnap their president? Let's just be wildly conservative. This whole thing took about, give or take, 24 hours. The president was gone. You want to bet they were working with people inside the administration? Because it won't be the first time. Again, I have a lot of examples that I have, but I'll just give you a few that I've used before. Salvador Allende was betrayed by his right-hand man. Mobutu Seseko backstabbed Patrice Lumumba. Blaise Compaoré in Burkina Faso, who is still alive and kicking right now, just apologized to Thomas Sankara's wife, was that last year, about the role he played in the, betrayal of his country's president and childhood best friend. When it comes to backstabbing, it's not someone far. It's always someone right next to you. So when a president of a sovereign nation can, if a president of a sovereign nation gets captured in less than 24 hours, that doesn't send a very good message. Actually, that sends a very scary message to anyone who is a president. Also one thing, if I was a president, I would be giving all my, you know, Minister of Defense and a right-hand man salary. Ooh, 100% increase. Are you kidding me? Anything like a right-hand man. You okay? The kids at home. They're okay, right? Don't tell me they're going to government school. Oh no, they're going to private school. In Europe, right? Switzerland. Yes, excellent idea. Do they need anything? Because they don't worry. You know, I'll see what I can do. I can do something. I can do so. Definitely not see. I can do something. Yeah. This is the right time to have the right hand man. Don't have the wrong hand man. You'll end up on the list of, praised heroes who died young after less than 60 days in office. Isn't that like how long, Patrice Lumumba was in office? Yeah. Politics is complicated. But, I wouldn't put it past the whole backstabbing part though. Someone there was providing information big time. So at this point, if I was the president of Russia, I would be calling all my homies from the front line, like, oh yeah, come here. America gave us a new strategy. Just come back here. Go back to your families now. Have a good life now. I mean, enjoy. Now, special forces, where were we? The goal is simple. Storm in there and drop a couple of bombs, kidnap the president, come back here, and then we will run the country until, again, may I repeat, we find someone who is suitable to actually run the country in line with who? Our interest. That's the world of, that's the politics as it stands now. Believe me when I tell you we are living in a dangerous world. Oh, it's always been dangerous. I mean, there are mosquito snakes and all that, but don't fear lions at this point. Fear humans. Fear humans. Men, women, as long as they're in power, fear those ones. So, the $30 billion part. Now, that one, the $30 billion part. I got that one from yours truly here. Okay, now I have two more and I only have 11 minutes. Okay, let's, can summarize this as fast as possible. Now, this is from 2022. U.S. court upheld a tribunal of $8.75 billion award to U.S. oil producer ConocoPhillips and over the expropriation of its Venezuela's oil assets, granting a default judgment in the case. in the case that was in 2022. Now, the decision gives the U.S. company, a.k.a. ConocoPhillips, a new authority to collect on a 2019 award by the World Bank Tribunal. Award includes interest that adds up to $1 billion. So make it $9.75 billion then in total. Owed to ConocoPhillips. Now, the World Bank International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes awarded, that's the ICSID thing, awarded ConocoPhillips $8.7 billion over the 2007 expropriation of three of its oil projects, the ones with a very difficult name that I struggled with just a couple of minutes ago, and had sought up to $30 billion for the takeover. Venezuela's government rejected the court's decision in a statement. They actually appealed to it, but then it's an unfair decision and it has been they actually appealed it for it to be set aside. There are a bunch of things they were talking there about staying some of it, but the ICSID was like, nah, we're gonna side with these guys here. So Venezuela now is caught in between a rock and hard place. So the whole. This is what one company is claiming. ExxonMobil operated in Venezuela before the nationalization. How much did they invest? How much did they lose? Are they willing to let it go? Also, you have to understand, multinational company. It's a multinational company. It's having investors. Those are the people that put money together to give what you call that company. And that company, even if it was nice enough to forgive you, the investors are going to go like, okay, fine. Thank you very much for playing Mahatma Gandhi, but can we have our money? And when they are coming to collect, especially with military might, oh, they are going to swindle you big time. Like I said, in the corporate world, swindling is the order of the day. It's a jungle. Survival of the fittest and the need to eliminate the weak. Now, Venezuela must pay Conoco over $8 billion that one is the one that's based on the World Bank's decision. And it's important also to come to realize that ICSID here. It's not, I'm not looking at them as a bad organization. I'm just looking at them as a very, 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 very good organization. Because after the expropriation, the initial amount of, of reparation, or more like a repayment of all that investment in both in financial terms and also technology, the initial amount they asked the Venezuelan government for is that if you are going to expropriate these things, then we will need $30 billion. Please. You'll have to give us $30 billion. Venezuela was like, are you nuts? $30 billion. What are you basing that math on? Like I said, corporate world, ripping each other off is the order of the day. So ICSID, ended up, giving a compensation award of $8.7 billion from $30 billion. Because according to Reuters report on this, according to Reuters report on in 2019 on the subject, the oil company aka ConocoPhillips had sought up to $30 billion for the takeover of three oil projects more than 10 years ago. Because this was in 2019 and the takeover was in 2007. Now, according to the World Bank report, the tribunal known as ICSID, and we've been through this, found the takeover unlawful in 2013 and 2 years, two years ago, that was in 2017, 2018. 2 years ago rejected the OPEC member countries' request for, you know, for reconsideration. Now, the tribunal said CONOCO could not seek a double recovery. It was not immediately clear how the funding would affect, would affect the ruling of $8.7 billion award. Now, the past award covered two of the company's three oil projects in Venezuela. Now, that award was, covered two, the offshore one. Remember, there's an onshore one. Now, let's put all that aside and let's bring all this home now, shall we? Let's talk about politics at home for the past, well, 6 minutes. If you are going to say let's nationalize resources, that's already dominated by foreign investors. You may want to do a little bit of a homework to find out how much did they invest in this country. And do we have that money if we nationalize it? Do we have that money? Because we know how much multinationals operate. If you just nationalize and they are not happy, I mean, they ask for $30 billion. I'm beginning to sense like the goal is so you are not able to afford it. Because if you are not able to afford it, then I don't know, just go and tell MI5, CIA, then to go a little bit, find an opposition in your country that's power hungry. And a lot of countries, including ours, have a bunch of opposition parties that are power hungry. Just give them enough money and they will parrot every propaganda piece you give them. And you want to bet there are people that are going to side with that political party. Do you see, like for the love of God, it keeps becoming more and more scarier. The more I read these things, it becomes more and more scarier how easy it is to destabilize a country. Stabilizing one, not easy. Destabilizing, very easy. Take Iran and Afghanistan, for example. Just drop a couple of bombs and Afghanistan was destabilized for 20 years. That's a whole generation. There are people that were born and grew up and got married in that conflict. If they didn't die. Yeah. That was me talking about the Venezuela discussion from the money part. And this whole 2 hours and 30 minutes, we were just talking about Venezuela and the money part. With one company. One. And Venezuela is also rich with other, in other resources, not just oil. Now ask yourself one question. Every time that you hear a politician saying that, if you vote for me, I will nationalize. Ask yourself one question. Which industry is that politician planning on nationalizing? And which companies, especially foreign investors and local, I mean, I went through the Tanzanian one, where a Tanzanian company was suing the Tanzanian government of, you know, at exit, this whole, at exit, the conciliation and arbitrating international investor and state body. They were suing each other. It's basically a dispute, there's a dispute that is going to be filed, and that dispute that is going to be filed, do you have the financial muscles to stand up to it? If the answer is no, you may want to strategize. Make sure that, before you kickstart all that plan, you have contingency plans in mind. You have backup plans of, you know what, if we go to ICSID, I have this number of lawyers, I have this amount of money to pay them, and if they dispute, in reference to all other cases, like, well, this one we just went through, in case, they make a ruling of this amount, this is where we're gonna get the money. Because you can pull it off, you can, but it must be a well thought out process. Because one wrong move, and your president is missing. Missing president, people, that doesn't happen every day. Helmed going missing. That's barely news. A president going missing, that's history, news, geography, mathematics, algebra, you name it. You know what? I'm so excited because, well, I witnessed my first government overthrow. So exciting. Well, back to that because I actually feel pity for civilians. When it comes to these things, I just feel pity for civilians. People in office, are you kidding me? Most of them are mostly on their plane right now out of the country. And Spain is like, you know what, we are going to welcome those people that are fleeing Venezuela because of this whole recent destabilizations. The Spanish have already opened up their borders. But in case you didn't know, Spain and Venezuela are separated by the Atlantic Ocean, or what I like to call the Athletic Ocean, because that ocean is rough. Have you been to Valves? That's the Atlantic Ocean saying, hello. This whole, Indian Ocean, sandy beaches type of, no, the Atlantic Ocean doesn't know that. The Atlantic Ocean is always throwing a hissy fit. Dictate is, tin ear, and, ekes, klarmak is of, the tape machine, and, ek han haste to slap because this, More waking up as may body dot mark. Boy, I said my vocabulary for that Afrikaans. Thank God I found it. That quick breakfast.
Lipura nengelo wapumba eva tere urikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoe ekukurile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge Fata Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Honora Tatuime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Filane, Eagle FM, the
I. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression.
Yeah, now, the reason why I pointed that whole thing out is because a lot of politicians like to run around using the word nationalize. So next time you have a political campaign and a politician starts saying, let's nationalize, sit him down and explain to him, if we find ourselves at exit and they are ruling we have to pay billions of dollars to these investors that we, by the way, invited to come here and invest, and then now we are kicking them out, do we have the money? And if these investors, pull up a BP plan on us, like they did with Mohammed Mossadegh, by basically, you know, they were like, okay, now if you are not going to pay us our money, we're going to pay the intelligence guys to come and overthrow you. Do you have the army? It all starts with a smear campaign. Do you have the media reach? You're welcome. The Time Machine with Helmut on Eagle FM, and it's a Monday, 2 minutes past the hour of 10, and Francine Angela takes over from here, and for Yostril here, I'm out. Tomorrow I'm back to my usual time slot, but still with the Time Machine until Friday, the usual home run schedule kicks off. Kicks off on the 12th. That's next week, Monday, when, you know, the usual Eagle FM schedule where you have a home run from 4:30 to 6 kicks off. But, that's subject to change. Subject to change. Because what? New year, new us too. Are you kidding? So you all have a good day now.